Views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM and welcome to Guardian Radio AM with Cecil Murray. This is Erin Green sitting in with my guest, Mr. Phil Davis Jr. Good morning, sir.
Top of the morning.
So listen, when I lived in Justice Gardens, right, with the sport, I was a competitor, not in the, well, in the Justice Gardens Olympic. We call it the Special Olympics because it's Olympics for people who have no athletic ability but still believe they are champions, right? I was, diving conch was my specialty, particularly in high mass church service diving conch.
About to ask you, above water or in water diving gun?
Right. And so I am also a open ocean free floating champion. Nobody could beat me floating. I could float on the job in your office. I just lean back, close my eyes. And once you get one of them high-end chairs, it's all about the equipment. I floating, buddy. Anyway, so I'm really, really enjoying this conversation this morning. To my audience here, the questions for the audience, please call and text. You could call at 323-6232, 325-4316, or 325-4259. You can text on the BTC text line, 422-GR96. That's 422-GR96. That's 422-4796. Standard text rates apply. So, here are the questions. Can you swim, tread water, or float?
All the above.
When was the first time you went in the water? How did you learn how to swim? Were you frightened, were you excited, or were you calm? Do all Family Island people come out of the womb knowing how to swim? Do you live or work around or in water but cannot swim? And that's not a shaming question. I'm not trying to shame you at all. And do you wear a swimsuit or swim trunks, or do you wear shirt and pants, shorts, cargo shorts on the beach?
All fresh up.
And then here's a question I waited for the end. What would your country look like if Bahamians were more comfortable with and in the ocean?
Atlantis.
The real Atlantis.
The real Atlanteans.
Yeah.
Ain't nobody wearing proper clothes, hardly any shoes, flip-flops, walking around, still going in the water, catching all your food and stuff like that,
yeah.
Relaxation, less stress on your joints and all that, all your muscles. It'll be a beautiful, beautiful life, eh?
Absolutely. Okay, caller, hold on. I got these texts here. Almost 50 years, and I can freestyle and float, but I can't tread water. That's the text. It says, I really want to learn to tread water. Did some classes, but I think it's psychological, the barrier.
No, it's just technique. Technique. The strokes are freestyle. You're keeping your arms long and straight. You have to be able to maneuver into a breaststroke or moving your hands side to side, and now your feet motion. Instead of doing a freestyle kick in the water to tread water, you're going to tire yourself out completely.
Yeah.
You've got to do a frog kick.
Okay. Right. And this is Mr. Phil Davis Jr., and you can contact him at MacFit360.
I'm the youth coordinator, swim instructor down there under Coach Alan Murray, who's the first Bahamian Olympic swimmer.
Awesome. Coach Murray, we got a caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. Sorry, you're not on the clock. You're on Guardian Radio AM. My apologies. We in the water.
Good morning to you, and good morning to the coach.
Morning.
Erin, very interesting conversation this morning. I can tell you from a very, very small, young age, of being the fifth of seven children, my father made it a priority to teach all of his children how to swim.
Mm-hmm.
Montague Beach was the place to have that done, and mm-hmm. Successfully all seven of his children can swim with high respect with no issues at all. And in fact, just about all of the basic techniques from breaststroke right down, mm-hmm. he made sure he taught all of his children how to swim. My thing is that I believe if you notice little children, they are instantly drawn to the water. Why? Mm-hmm. Because before birth, they are actually immersed in water, so automatically they would be attracted to water once being born. I believe
natural
that
element.
The swimming technique should be taught to little children from months after they're born.
Absolutely correct.
Basically, because one, a lot of parents believe that the kids, they're afraid that kids are around water and they automatically get afraid like that, but as far as the children are concerned, they are already used to it, so they're instantly drawn to it. So it's a unique opportunity to actually begin teaching them mm-hmm. the technique. So as they get older, they would then become either the next Michael Phelps,
mm-hmm.
or even better still, because we are upper pelagic nation, just about every child here in this country should know how to swim effectively.
Correct.
And I see no reason why we should have the excuse that my child can't swim.
Mm-hmm.
I really can't see that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would encourage every parent, from small, from baby, get them out there. I think, Coach, this is where you come in.
Yes,
perhaps,
sir.
You need to take this thing national and try to do a national agency to encourage young mothers and the parents of young kids to bring their children in to teach them from very small.
Mm-hmm,
at a very small fee, if necessary, to keep the institute or the organization going,
mm-hmm.
but to teach their children how to swim appropriately and properly.
Yes.
Yep.
And I think that way we will have a nation of swimmers, even to Olympic level. We can have them swimming for the Bahamas for a change.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for taking my call this morning.
Absolutely love it, caller, because what you're talking about, you hit it right on the head. When we're dealing with these toddlers and we're teaching them how to swim, it's not going to be ideal. You're not getting them ready and putting on their swim gear and putting them in the water and putting on the flotation devices. Their graduation day, when we put them to the test, we have them in shoes, full pants, hat, all that, like they're going out. And we literally just nudge them into the water to see what will happen, how they react. Because when that child wanders out of the house or something like that, they're going to fall into the water. They may be on their back. They may be on their side. But they have to be able to know what to do to get themselves back to safety. You are absolutely correct, Colin.
Right. And I got a text here that follows right up on that and says, listen, Aaron, everybody should learn to do the doggy paddle.
Yes.
To save themselves.
Yes.
And then on following up on the caller, I want to thank you, sir, because I thought it was... like when you go to the hospital and you have a child, right? Or your sister go to the hospital and she have a child, or your daughter go to the hospital and you, the daddy, the uncle, the grandfather have to sign a thing to say, I promise to go to the beach and let them little children jump off my shoulders
uh-huh.
into the water. I promise to Superman them.
Uh-huh.
I promise if other little children on the beach by themselves and they want to join in the fun, I will be a community daddy and let them jump off. I thought that was a part of the national conscript. I thought you had to do that.
Hold on. You mean like on John Canoe Beach, the long line and everybody running behind each other and flipping and jumping?
Yeah,
like the
but daddy, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's, the sweetest thing is to go to Montague Beach and chill out, and then you see daddy go in the water,
mm-hmm.
right? And then a bunch of children, and all they want to do is jump off of daddy's
uh-huh.
shoulders. I need y'all to know that that's your duty. That's your job, is to present yourself and be available. In fact, I want to say good morning and thank you to my mother, Leela Green,
mm-hmm.
because I'm a swimmer, and I'm a swimmer because of her. My earliest memories, every day, we used to go to Montague Beach after work. And every day, my mother used to teach when she see a little children bubbling. She'd say, come here, come on. Okay, here's what you're going to do. You put your hands in front of you. And she would literally do that and teach little kids how to manage themselves
yep.
in the water. I learned how to swim at Montague Beach Hotel. So when you see me on that line of traffic and my face screw up, I mad y'all tearing down my personal lived experience, right? My history, that's the Montague Beach Hotel I learned to swim at. And for a lot of people, you hear the stories. In fact, I think Mother Pratt's brother may have taught me how to swim too, possibly. You know, these are important moments. Our connection to the sea is so important. And all the little moments that connect us, we remember them.
My fondest memories with my dad, going to Cat Island, especially Cat Island Regatta and stuff like that. When I tell you they've got this tradition, first thing in the morning before the break, before the sun comes up, they're in the ocean.
Yeah, they call them the solar bears. Uh-huh. There's a gang of them here. Uh-huh. That's the next gang I forget to say good morning to. Good morning to the Montague and Cat Island solar bears. Uh-huh. Listen, let's get to this call. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. My apologies. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. Hello? Oh, I'm sorry. We could hear you. Call back again. Your line was a little broken up. I got a text here that says, I can tread water and float. I can swim. I learned to swim. My Mr. Somebody taught me. He just fling me in the pool. That's a lot of experiences, right, for many of us. Second answer, no. All island people cannot swim. My mother, who is the best cook in the world from Bimini, she can't swim, so I am half driftwood.
I mean, we talking about this importance of swimming and stuff like that, and we're looking only at the aspect of the pool and the ocean, but we're just about to be into hurricane season. Wow. And if we remember what happens, king tides and a lot of rain, residual water on the land, not being able to move from house to house if you don't have a kayak or
a flotation
device.
Yeah.
You got to know some basic skills in the water, eh?
But listen, let's take a pause. Let's take this call, and then let's get into that basic water safety and disaster preparedness tips. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Yes, good morning, Ms. Green. Good morning to your guest.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yeah, I'm hearing all the comments, right? And nobody's mentioning the fact that when you're young, you're afraid of the water, especially depth. So the gentleman said, I agree with that you shouldn't use the floaters, but those are the things that you initiate the first love of the water for with the child. You put them on the child. My pa used to throw me in the water off Rose Island in deep water with the life vest on, and I still used to be afraid. Uh-huh. But and wearing the life vest, I became familiar with the water and less afraid. So when it was time to take it off, I was able to tread, and I learned, my brother was from SOC, went to soccer. My other cousin went to QC, and they were the best swimmers. Mm-hmm. So they had set the trend. But you have to get the child to don't be in fear of the water, because what happens is when you're in fear of the water, your heart beats fast, and then you will be able to become tired faster.
Correct.
So once you learn how to relax in the water,
right?
When you submerge in the water more, the more buoyancy you have. So you have to be comfortable with the water. And the people say the doggy paddle, but the doggy paddle is not the most comfortable way to swim. The best way to swim is on your back.
Correct, sir.
And you can swim forever.
Yes, all right? Sir.
And you have to have confidence in the water, but also water safety. You could get killed out there at the beaches. The guy speeding up and down with the jet ski, you pass the buoy, et cetera, et cetera. But it's all about, but at least the government could implement some pool systems, keep the South Beach pools, do something to encourage the youth to get into the water.
Barker's rule.
It's quite frightening to see the amount of people drowning, but it's really all about fear. And there's new science about swimming. You don't have to kick your legs and bend them as much. And you just learn how to use the buoyancy of each stroke and learn how to breathe whilst you're freestyling.
I thought I was just lazy.
It's difficult. So you have to learn how to breathe every three strokes, every four strokes, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Learn how to keep your eye open. And, of course, you must learn how to tread for at least an hour or 15 minutes every time you go. Have a good day.
Don't go, caller.
The fear aspect of it. Most people are only fearful of things that they do not understand, hey?
So yeah, but what I'm saying is the floaters.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. My little daughter, I had them for, she would always, she's fearful of the water, but see, what I noticed, what she does is she would hold her breath and she would go underneath the water. She's only six. So I'm trying to get her to don't be fearful of the water. Mm-hmm. Like I said, you don't have to hold your nose and you don't have to close your eyes. So you can always tell when someone is fearful of the water when close their eyes and they're holding their nose.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, but I guess sometimes the chemicals in the water from the jet skis burn your eyes, but you have to learn to do those things. You just swim with your eyes closed because you don't know what's coming. Even me, as I go out in the deep, I'm afraid of things that I might encounter. But you know, I just part of life.
Now that might have been a part of the aspect.
But I'll fight back. That's what I'll do. Have a good day.
No, don't go 52. Hey, I got another question for you.
That might have been a part of the aspect of in which how we learned.
Yeah, but I grew up on a boat. My pa always had a boat. Me and him used to go fishing and
yeah.
Just you know, Rose Island is off limits, I guess. Like, it's so built up. I didn't even last time I been in. So, you know, I just grew up around
52. I have a question for you. Do you think we need to make it mandatory for children to wear flotation devices on public beaches or at specified depths?
Yeah, because unless they're being supervised by someone, Aaron.
Correct.
Because, you know, I remember us going out and one of my friends tried to follow us and he almost drowned. Mm-hmm. And I tried to help him and he tried to drown me, so I had to leave him. And my cousin who went to QC and my brother who went to SOC had to submerge underneath the water and lay him flat.
Yeah.
So if a person is drowning and they're scared and they're not comfortable, they're going to drown you.
Yeah.
You have to encourage them to relax and lay flat. That's the best way to save someone is to lay flat. When you're flat, you have more buoyancy.
You.
Mm-hmm. It's simple science, you know. Just have a good day.
Yeah, man, thank you. Blessings.
Inside my experience, right,
mm-hmm.
I've had the privilege of teaching over 120 kids per day.
Mm-hmm.
Three sessions of over 34, 36 kids. So I'm going through a lot of kids, right? So a lot of the times these kids, their fear mechanism is to tell you, I don't like this, I don't want to do it, I cannot do it, I'm not willing to do it. I listen to all of that, I put it in one ear and I take it out the other. Now, what I was trying to get into, the way that me, yourself, and a lot of other older people, how we learned how to swim, we were thrown off a dock or off a boat or something like that, and nobody was in the water to actually help us with that confidence part. What I do in teaching kids swimming and with my instructors, I make it absolutely pivotal that you are in the water to help out with the child and feeding in that confidence to give them the correct skills and that calmness to be able to handle the waters. Because just as you were saying, tension, stiffness is the easiest way for you to sink inside the water.
Absolutely. We got another caller on the line. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. Are you sorry, caller? Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Good morning, Aaron. I'm getting back with, about life vests, right?
Yeah.
Government should be like how Miami have it. Everybody in the boat should have a life vest. You know how much men went fishing, boat turnover. These are great swimmers, but they drown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they get tired and the ocean is rough. And
yeah.
Once they set up a $20 life vest, gonna save life. That should be mandatory. And Aaron, I went to Malibu last Friday.
Yeah.
The water was hot.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I can imagine the next hurricane and a warm hot water.
Yep.
It's gonna be vicious.
Yeah.
It's gonna be that water was hot. I don't feel the water that hot. I guess they say time is changing.
I'm going to go get some ice. Let's put in for an ice machine and let's like just put some ice in the ocean, man. That can help.
But I don't know because hurricane breathe off warm water, and that water was hot. But I dive into a hot steam. I said, wow. But anyhow,
yeah.
We need to learn how to do summer camp and that summer camp and to learn how to swim. Because when you drown and you are panicking.
You
are literally panicking and you're breathing and you're sucking in air.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to learn how girls need to learn how to cook. Like how they have. I mean, when I was a kid, Chad Gibson was like a summer camp. Learn how to cook, learn how to play football, soccer, gym. They built a big gym. And we spent from Monday to Friday there. And one day a week, we went to the pool, learn how to swim.
Yeah.
And I learned how to, and I'm a great swimmer, but I could dive and save myself.
Confidence, yeah. Thank you very much.
Now, what the caller had said about the able seamen and being on the boat and the boat capsized and wondering why people would drown. It's absolutely that, knowing what to do and how to do it inside the water. The easiest way to drown in the water is by helping somebody and doing it the incorrect way.
Yeah.
So if somebody is struggling inside the water, there is absolutely no way that you're going to approach them face to face and swim onto them where they can grab you, unless you have a flotation device that keeps a good distance between the two of you, because there is nobody stronger than somebody who thinks that they're going to die and you are their savior. They will grip onto you, pull on your face, push you under, do anything
to
keep
themselves.
They can try
to stand on you to run out of the water. Yeah.
And what we are taught to do is to either swim under them and approach them from behind where they cannot see you so you can grab them under their arms so their arms cannot get you.
You immobilize
or
them.
Or if they do have that death grip on you, you literally have to go underwater where they can't breathe anymore. Hopefully they let you go. Or you have to hit them straight in the face and hope that they let go of you.
7 pounds of pressure or less on the cheek or on the nose. Yep. Yeah, and hope they let go.
Yep.
Ah, boy, listen, if you ever see me running on water, it's a shark. It's not Jesus. It's a shark, and I'm running away. That's real fear and panic.
Can we also talk about the decompression and the bends and stuff?
Let me take this call, and then right after this call, we're going to go to that. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Miss Green.
Yes, sir.
Hi. I learned how to swim, you wouldn't believe, on a place called Malcolm Park. Old Malcolm Park by the Eastern Parade underneath Sydney Point 10 Bridges.
Yeah, okay.
They used to have the sand barge used to come and bring the sand in to the city.
Mm-hmm.
And there used to be these big piles of sand on this barge. In the evenings, my brothers and those used to go on the Eastern Parade to practice for the Pioneers track and field team.
Mm-hmm.
After practice, then they used to go out swimming to cool down.
Okay.
But they used to take me with them, and one day, we got on the bars, they'd be jumping and diving off the bars. They just grabbed me and threw me out in that deep water.
Yeah.
And they jump over after me, and the object was to swim from the bars, round the bars, where they had some steps on the side of the wall.
Come out, yeah.
Because most of that area, what you call, they used to call out there the pond. What you see with all those driveways and everything, you know there used to be beaches out there?
Mm-hmm. It's all reclaimed.
By where Porter's Key Dock, when we go there to get cones and things like that, you'd be beaches out there, you know.
Yeah.
Before they filled it and built the causeway and everything.
Yeah.
In the front of the Isaacs, them, they invited the Isaacs and them house. We used to go out there swimming with Don Highland there.
Man, listen, Sparky, you call here and charm me with all this history, all the fun y'all used to have. I got to go, Sparky. All the fun things y'all used to do. Listen, let me just get these texts, and then we're going to talk about diving, water safety.
Yes.
And we want to say condolences to the family of the young man from Abaco that died tragically after a diving experience.
Yes.
Let me get to these texts. First text, we used to swim. Aaron, your guest says, it's about vaccination. We used to swim in a cesspit that had fish in it, but I almost drowned in a pool after diving off the board. It was not a good, nice experience, but I can swim now. It seems like they used to swim in a cesspit with no fish, with fish in it. I never had a problem, but he went in a pool and almost drowned.
Yeah.
Look here, we're just thankful you're alive, Texter. We're thankful you made it. Thank you for texting today. Another text. Good day. Do you think the lack of beach access and the monopoly of beaches by resorts is one of the reasons why many children don't know how to swim? But I think that's only a part of it, right? Like, that part of the cultural experience has shifted. Like you heard Sparky say just now, there's a whole bunch of land. You wouldn't believe it used to be beaches. There used to be a lot of access. And younger people had greater access to the beach sort of on their own. But that's not causation. That may be correlation.
Yeah.
It may have something to do with it, but it's not the
Before
cause.
Before the water parks and stuff opened, Sundays, Goodman's Bay. Man, that used to be packed, eh?
Yeah.
Everybody used to be swimming after church on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in fact, the Sunday beach picnic was the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Another text, morning, I'm from an island. I'm 67 years old. Wish I learned how to swim.
It's never too late.
It's never too late. And if you are on Cat Island right now, Nikita Shiel Roll, environmentalist, ocean conservationist, Bahamian mermaid, she is helping people learn how to swim on Cat Island right now.
Mm-hmm.
There are people, if you in Lutra, you go find somebody from the Methodist Church, man. If ever there's a family of people, the Methodist Church can get you straight. Right? That's my inn. I say Lutheran because of the Methodist Church. But, you live in Nassau. Well, you're going to go and look for Mr. Phil Davis Jr. I hear you could find him at MacFit. That's what I hear. That's where he's be. He can't put out his number right now because I put it on block because of why. But, listen, the person did not swim in waste, okay? And yes, he did tell the story on air texter, right? But the fish was living, and the fish was good, and he is good. What it is like, listen, he's saying, I in this old thing, and you would think this is foolish, but I had the greatest risk in a pool, which you would think would be safer. That's what the texter was saying. Thank you. And the texter said, thanks, they're going to look out for you. But you're never too old to learn how to swim. And so we're talking about swimming and diving. We had a caller earlier talk about hurricane preparedness, the increase in flooding, and the need to know how to swim. But let's go to the diving
aspect. Yes, August 1st just came in, and we got a lot of people in the water dealing with crawfish and all that. Mm-hmm. And if they know anything about the bends is something that can affect you inside the water as well, even if you are the most proficient swimmer, all right? Mm-hmm. What ends up happening? Inside air is 21% oxygen, 79% nitrogen. So anytime that you're diving, if you dive 10 meters in the water, which is 33 feet, you're increasing that pressure in your body with the nitrogen molecules. So what ends up happening, you'll start to get disoriented, your joints will start to lock up, and it's going to be really, really hard for you to sustain yourself in the water and out of the water. What ended up happening with a couple of these divers that you saw, I think it was like last year, mm-hmm. when there was a diver that had the bends and just the lack of proper knowledge. They thought by putting the diver back inside the water in that pressured atmosphere that it was going to be better, and it absolutely was not. That's one of the worst things that you can do. So while you're in the water, you have to maintain yourself. So if you're diving 33 feet and more, you're going to have to, when you're coming up, you're going to have to take your time for the oxygen molecules to break down the nitrogen inside your body. Without that, the Bahamas will probably have to start looking into these decompression chambers, mm-hmm. where you'll be able to have help inside of these, where people will be monitoring you straight throughout to make sure that nothing really happens drastic. So all it is that nitrogen building up in your body. You can be the best swimmer in the world, and we've seen it before. Olympian swimmers in the Bahamas back in the day, Rose Island, dove down one too many times and never surfaced up, all right? So it's all about being aware of the water and knowing what to do and how to help somebody in that type of situation.
All right. Now, so clarify something for me. Is a decompression chamber the same thing as a hyperbaric chamber, or are they slightly different?
I believe they're slightly different. All right. Because what it is it increase. It's like putting a balloon inside a container that is sealed up, and you're increasing the pressure in there. You'll see that balloon, even though it's inflated, it's going to get smaller and smaller and smaller, meaning that it can take in more molecules,
yeah.
All right? And then when you start to take the pressure out of it, it starts to blow right back up again. This same thing is happening inside your body. So like you were saying with the divers, and you think that they got that big bear belly.
Yeah.
No, that's really like the gases inside their stomachs just erupting.
Right. You know? Now, listen, Carla, I'm sorry we missed you. I had my eye on you. I know you can't see me, but I could see you. So if you get an opportunity, please call back, caller. And so, you know, here are the questions I think that we should be asking. Why don't we have hyperbaric chambers at ports, right? At the most popular or most trafficked ports by divers. Why don't we have emergency stations out there? Mm-hmm. Do we have emergency mobile services, right? Like, is there a mobile hyperbaric chamber that can be taken to a dock? And should this be something that we legislate?
Well, then again, I think it's going to be a catch-22 situation if you provide it in New Providence and the highly dense islands.
Right.
And then you have these divers in the outer islands and there's nothing.
Yeah,
there,
because,
but, like,
hold on, right, because before
everything.
the priority is
have one.
We need to have a hyperbaric
Correct.
Chamber on each island, and for our Long Island, the big long ones, mm-hmm. Eleuthera, in major settlements.
For sure,
Luther
Spanish Wells, where they're doing all the crawfish divings and
yeah.
all that stuff.
Long Island people is dive too, right?
Yeah. They're more into goats and things like that, you know.
Don't. Man, listen, we have these myths. They grow nice pineapple in Long Island,
How
man.
You mean, yes. Right.
Nice pineapple. We got a caller on the line. We go to that caller in a second. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Yeah, morning. I will make a comment.
Yes.
I think before anyone start to use those tanks, I think they should go in a class to train.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think that's the problem. Everybody just put the tank on and say, well, I'm going to dive X amount of this tank. And they don't know the danger, because that's very dangerous and coming up. That gets to learn on it.
Yeah.
And another thing, too, you could panic. Let's say you go up to go down by 35 feet and you see a shark. And, hey, yeah, it is. You would try to fly after that dog quick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, still ain't
so that's why I think they need to do a class first to teach them the danger.
Because there are ways to avoid a shark attack without just pushing straight up to the surface.
Correct. If you're calm inside the water as well, because if you panic and you increase your heart rate, the shark's gonna come to you anyway.
Because you could sense it in the water, right?
But if you're familiar with it, again, like I said, the lack of knowledge. If that shark is coming towards you, a shark is gonna give you a first little bump to see if you're gonna be able to be eaten. So if they're coming towards you that close, you need the hardest item that you have or your fist and punch them straight in the nose or anywhere like that, and the shark will just turn off, all right?
Mm-hmm.
That's their area, so you just got to be able to know how to maneuver around them.
Yeah.
But do not rush up to the top.
Yeah.
Do not do that.
Absolutely. Well, this is what I'm saying. That's why I wear shoes in the water, just in case I have to kick a shark in the nose. Listen, shark, me and you, we friends, you know? I just had to send you a message. So I got a couple texts here. Great show as usual, Miss Green. Which island has the best swimmers, Long Island, or best swimming, or swimmers?
Swimmers.
No, it says swimming. Long Island, Eleuthera, Exuma, or Bimini. I noticed you didn't put Andrus on that list. You didn't put Mayaguana on that list.
Or Grand Bahama.
And you ain't put, well, I don't know about Grand Bahama. Let's talk about Grand Bahama.
Grand Bahama, well, at least in the competitive world of swimming, Grand Bahama.
No, I don't think they mean swimmers.
Swimming. Yes, like the, I think they mean beaches. The
because they didn't put Andrus on this list. And how could they talk about the best swimmers in the Bahamas and not put Andrus on the list? See, I know Long Island because my neighbor's father and his uncle build boats. So they build boats out of trees so they could come to Nassau for wives. And they say they had to build a boat or they was going to swim.
And Abaco, too. Forgetting Abaco.
And forgetting Abaco. Ah, boy. Ah, boy, another text here. What are you doing with your feet when you tread water? And what safety device should persons diving more than 33 feet have on them to ensure they're not surfacing too fast? Finally, can we put excess nitrogen in those people scooting out of corners on red? No, we have to get rid of the nitrous oxide. They have too much nitrous. That's why they're speeding out the corner. But the devices, like how are there mechanisms you use to maintain your depth and your rate of
depth gauge, anywhere in between when you're coming up. So it's like every 5 feet to 10 feet, you want to wait 2 minutes to 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So it's a nice calm coming up. Obviously, if you're diving without a tank, you're going to have to be able to control your air, and preferably do not dive any deeper than 45, 60 feet. Because the second that you get into that second threshold of 66 feet, which is 20 meters, now that pressure increases twofold.
Yeah, man, if you're not Aquaman, what you doing diving that deep with no tank? I mean, come on. You're not a mermaid. I mean, if you are a merman, come call me.
Now, you got some fellas in Cat Island who dive in 70, 80 feet for lobster and things like that, one breath.
Yeah.
Their bodies are fine-tuned
right,
machines.
People who are diving like that, and they are sort of, we call expert divers in the islands, right?
Yes.
But don't just jump out there and think you could do that. That is professional work. That is years and years of preparing the body and understanding the body. Because just because you could do that 5 days out of seven, don't mean you could do it every day,
exactly.
Right?
Proper acclimation.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing, treading water in your feet.
Yes. So treading water with your feet, like I was saying earlier, it's not a freestyle kick. The freestyle kick or the butterfly kick is going to use up too much of your energy to keep yourself up. You're going to need your arms a little bit further out in a position wading out and moving your hands back and forward with the bottom of your palms towards the bottom of the water. You're pushing the water down. Now, with your feet, what you want to do, you want to emulate a frog kick. So your legs are going out, around, and then squeezing together. You're getting the most amount of force in between your legs, and you could do one leg at a time, or you could do both legs at the same time. But remember, four engines are better than two. So if you're using your hands and your feet, that's fine. To tread water, I can tread water with that breaststroke kick and have my hands out of the water because you can train up to do that. But that's being able to use the most amount of force off of your feet to be able to sustain yourself. So it's just learning a little bit of technique.
Absolutely. Somebody says, who's diving 80 feet? What are they looking for? They're looking for Atlantis, the city of Atlantis.
But them crawfish and stuff like that.
Man, I heard that they are 200-pound, somebody saw a 200-pound lionfish because they get a certain size. Uh-huh. There's nothing large enough. There's no predator to eat them. And they can, at lower depths, they could be huge.
Absolutely. And then also texter, down at 70, 80 feet, that fish surprised to see you. It ain't swimming away from you. So when
it's
that group
shocked.
Are looking you right in your face, well, you lick him with that spear one time. Bah.
Listen, and what I'm saying is this, is because that's a bit of animal cruelty. Give him a five-second head start.
Never.
Yeah, you got to let the fish run for 5 seconds, then spear him. That's like if you wake up in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, to go to the bathroom, and you meet the boy when you open the door in the hallway, you meet the boy walking to the kitchen. And he look at you, and you got to give him 5 seconds before you throw that spear at him. He did not expect to see you there at 3 o'clock in the morning while he's trying to get a snack out of your fridge. But it's, that principle is absolutely right. You are in the fish's home, and at that depth, a fish don't expect to see you.
Not at all.
But sort of back to my, you know, that initial question I had for the audience, like, what would your country look like if you were more comfortable in the water? So you asked the question, Texter, well, what's 80 feet in the water? Let me tell you what's 80 feet in the water. The new Bahamas Maritime Museum in Grand Bahama, where Peter Michael Pateman is the new doctor. Dr. Pateman is the director of the new museum, and the new museum is housing treasures discovered in Bahamian waters, right? And he got a special permit, and he's not selling them, and he's housing them there. See, we're lucky that he has made the Bahamas his home, or his cousin, his family, and he's willing to do that. But if we were more comfortable in the water, then we would realize that what's 80 feet and below is treasure, our heritage, our history. And our country would look, maybe it would look different if we were comfortable with diving 80 feet. Like, I saw this video, Mr. Phil Davis Jr., did you know that there's a greasy pole all over the world? Like, everybody is a Bahamian. In Macedonia, in Greece, anywhere there's a waterway, anywhere there's a coastal town, there is a greasy pole, buddy. And so this is water culture, right? For them, it's on the water, and they go over the water. Us, we go up the maypole, right?
Yes, I've seen that.
So they run out. The pole is greased, and they run out over the water to grab the flag.
And there's a flag or a ring on the end.
Right, and you have
to
grab it.
And they scurry themselves on it. Yeah, I see
right.
that.
That's ocean. That's culture. Mm-hmm. That's hundreds of years of culture. See, we doing this wonderful redevelopment of New Providence. The wharf is being completely changed. But remember the pictures of the Greek priests throwing the coins off, or the cross.
Or the boys diving up the quarters and stuff.
Right, that's it, right? Yeah. Right? And this is your ocean culture. Mm-hmm. This is what you come up out of, right? And as we lose that, then we lose the capacity to fulfill all of these potentials. So when you say, well, what is 80 feet under the water? Your heritage, your culture, your future is 80 feet under the water.
I mean, not even going 80 feet under the water. A practice that I have, Saturdays or a Sunday, me and my friends, we love to just go out to any beach. And we take our spare and we go swimming out. And we'll swim out maybe out to 20 feet deep. But being able to be out on the water and look back, and I'm just in awe, these people who cannot go past their waist. Mm-hmm. And you'd be able to see this wonderful world under the water that provides your food, peace of mind, because there's nothing more beautiful than being under the water.
And it cleans the air. Even when you're not in the water, the seabeds, the seagrasses, they capture CO2. It's cleaning the ocean for us. Mm-hmm. I have a text here that says, listen, the Loch Ness Monster is 80 feet in the water. And dear texter, that's why I wear shoes in the water, because I'm in your house, and at any moment you may ask me to leave. And so, like, I have this, I love the water. I grew up swimming Montague, and then the trips with my family, Treasure Key, Exuma, but every summer in Eleuthera, 7 Mile Beach, where you could walk out forever before the water reached your thigh even. And so I just beautiful water experiences all the time. And I went to the rainforest in Suriname. We went in the Gunzi River, and it's little piranha. Not the type that bites you, but little piranha, they like clean your feet and thing in the river. And then we went to this river they call Coca-Cola River. because it looked black like Coca-Cola. Yeah. And when I put on my shoes to go in the water, they laugh at me. I tell them, I live in the cleanest, clearest waters in the world, and I still put on my shoes to go in the water. Because there are amazing things in the water that could kill you. Mm-hmm. We still have giant squid in the water, great white sharks in the water. And let's dispel that myth right now. Great white sharks, they kill at such a low rate. This idea that they are the ocean's killers, this is a bad look. Y'all been talking about them bad. It's a myth, it's a misnomer. Sharks kill so few people per year, you know?
It's usually the things that you cannot see that you need to be able to worry about in the water.
Like the sea lice.
Man,
they light up plenty of people this summer.
Because they are only going to get you where you're in contact with materials, eh?
Yeah.
So if you're in the water skimpy, they only going in where they could rub up against you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So them and sea thimbles and jellyfish and stuff like that, the smaller stuff, those are the ones you're going to probably run into more than anything else.
But that's why we wear all the clothes. It makes sense now. That's why we wear plenty clothes in the water.
You could just grease up, man.
Yep. then how you going to save me if I drown and every time you grab me, I can slip?
I grab you by your pants. Don't worry about it.
There you go. There you go. And that's probably safest. All right. I got a text here that says, Aaron, the government should make it mandatory that there's a life vest for everybody aboard the fishing boats. Even the mail boat should an accident happen. Aaron, in Miami, the Florida Marine Patrol stops your boat and checks to see if you have safety devices and to see if you have the right size fish or lobsters. If not, you will be ticketed. I think there has to be some sort of incentive to get life vests in every home.
Whilst we're talking about the life vests, guys, please, 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 when you're going out to the store to buy these life vests, the pretty ones are not the ones that you need. Because after a while, they will get saturated with water and they will weigh you inside the water as well. What you see the defense force and the police and stuff using, those old school orange ones that are tying onto you, they do not sink. All right? Those are the best set that you can get.
All right. Another text. I learned to swim when I was about 8 years old. I used to go on long wharf. Some older friends took me out by the buoy and let me go. Where I was so scared, I started to paddle. They helped me, and from then, I'm a good swimmer. I'm 64 now. And I imagine it's the confidence in knowing that they got you and they came to help you. That is awesome. Now, I got a couple more texts here. When we come back from the break, we're going to get into those texts. And then I got a couple more questions here. And then I got a big question that I didn't put on the list, especially for the ladies. Were you deterred from going in the water because of your hair? Did your mommy and daddy tell you I spend too much money on your hair for you to go in the water? Anyway, stay tuned. You're on Guardian Radio AM with Aaron Green today and Mr. Phil Davis Jr. We'll be right back.
We're not always able to see the storms in life approaching, but we can take the necessary steps to be prepared to ensure the safety of ourselves, our loved ones, and our property. This hurricane season, trust J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers. We'll be here to help you get back on track in your time of need. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com. J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, giving you peace of mind.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio AM with Cecil Newry. This is Aaron Green. I'm swimming in the pool today for Mr. Newry, and Phil Davis Jr. is joining me. I forget Mr. Newry is also a big proponent of youth swimming as well. Y'all may be competitors in the competition world, but the competition is always good.
Well, I'm jealous of him. They definitely got the community pool in Fox Hill, hey? So
yeah. Boy, look, I'm going to go take advantage of that pool in a minute. But I'm waiting until it's like October. until it's like October. I have a text here that says, Miss Green, evidently you never watched Jaws 1, 2, and 3. First of all, I just didn't want to tell you all that's half of the reason why I wear shoes in the water. I watched The Fog and I don't like the dark. And I'm 46, buddy. So yeah, that was a big part of it. But then I've grown this respect for the things in the ocean. Yes. You learn, A, that it's their home. This is where they live. And they manage it quite well. I need you to notice when you go in there, any garbage you see in the ocean is clearly labeled from a human. You know, fish drop that garbage there, right? And so they have it under control. I got you, Texter. I may send that question out. And so, sir, as a swim coach now, don't talk your people's business, but for me, hair and going in the water was always a big deal. I had to have a swim cap. I don't like swim caps. And even the swim cap don't really, I mean, it is wake sometimes, but it don't really, really do what you're trying to do. Do you think that the African Bahamians relationship with hair, the young girl's relationship with her hair, has been a barrier to women in particular and their comfortability in the water?
Absolutely. One, of course, I love you Bahamian women. You always love to look tip-top, and your hair definitely pulls right into that.
Oh, yeah.
But I've seen, particularly within my family, competitive swimmers, even when my sisters and stuff got their hairs done, man, if that was on a Friday or a Saturday, they ain't going back to swimming until about Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
So they ain't willing to mess
that's
that up.
That's plenty money.
To look good. I got one now. I teach swimming 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock in the morning. She's not going to miss the actual the workout, but she's coming with the cap on and her head is not going in. She can kick the whole practice and stuff like that.
But she's trying to avoid that.
It's a deterrent with a lot of young girls, and it shouldn't be, because we can get caps and certain things to put on your hair, or just sacrifice that. We got to make a piece of a sacrifice in order to be safe for the rest of your life.
Absolutely. I got a caller on the line here. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. Sorry, you are on Guardian Radio AM. I'm going to get used to it, but I'm only going to be here for a short time. Good morning. Good morning, caller. Did I scare you away? I'm sorry. Anyway, I think that caller is, if you can reconnect, caller, please reconnect. We give you 2, 3, 1. There you go. I was waiting for you to come back to the surface, caller, but you never came back. All right, I got a text here for you, sir. It says, is a 3NRS life vest good, or is it's not a good standard?
The 3NR, you would have to tell me a little bit more about that. If that is the pretty looking ones that you put on when you go on the jet ski, it will work proficiently for at least about 6 hours or so. But then what ends up happening, the water will
begin to seep in. Yeah.
And it gets a little loggy. It might not take you all the way to the bottom, but it's not going to keep you on the top
right
anymore.
So it may be a quick rescue,
right,
but not a survival tool.
Correct. It's a spare tire to get you to the spot to fix your real tire.
I understand. See, we got to... Oh, I'm sorry, caller, you dipped out. That's no problem. Because I think a lot of... We got a balance of things here, right? I think we have cultural norms, cultural things happening and shifting, right, that affect how we relate to the water. And then I think we have a lack of policy and infrastructure in place that also contribute to the issue.
Correct.
Right? For instance, we're a tourist economy. We sell experiences to tourists, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we sell beach, sun, sand, and sea. Why aren't we ensuring that all public waterways are properly have proper signage, right? Mm-hmm. I know canals are difficult and different. Some canals are private, right? I'm not sure how the canal operates, but the canal is on the back of my property, right? The border of my property is the canal.
Mm-hmm.
And so can the government mandate that I put in steps or I put in a safety feature, right? Can we mandate that every 100 yards we have a rope ladder on all canals,
now,
public or private?
Now thinking about it, whilst looking at the recent situation, that happened in Seabreeze. Come to think about it, I don't think there are much ways for you to get out of the water if you move from that spot. Because we know that any type of ocean set in water, even though it's in a canal, that's connected to the ocean.
Oh, yeah, and tide.
So that means that tide is moving. So the spot that you enter into the water is not going to be the spot you're going to come out.
And if you're not a strong swimmer, you can't control
where
you're going to touch the wall, right? And
that
so,
is correct.
You know, it's we have this sort of benefit of being an archipelago, benefit of so many different ways that you can get to the water, but there's a con, right? There's a detriment to that, which is it's so difficult to police these spaces. It's so difficult to provide safety mechanisms in all these spaces. But we should begin to think about these things.
Because even the wharf and stuff downtown, I know you've probably seen it too. There weren't any steps.
No.
But these kids were strong enough to grab onto one of those tire devices that were tied onto a rope and climb themselves up back out of the water.
And I probably would have been more adventurous, right?
Yeah.
If I knew that there was... Because the way my insurance is set up, right? I don't have time for all of that. But rope ladders, carving steps into the stone, and then lights.
Yes.
Lights for the evening, solar lights, so the area is well lit in the evening time. But listen, I got two callers coming in, producer, if we have time. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
Hey, Aaron. Jeff here again.
Yes, sir.
I see you're talking about the Seabreeze Canal.
Mm-hmm.
Seabreeze Canal basically have homeowners living already on the canal portions on both sides. And basically, those persons they are the owner of boats and everything. So there are steps to some of those homes.
Right.
All right? There's a portion of that canal that has no inhabitants there. In other words, no houses, no or anything like that. So no steps or anything would be in those areas. The thing is now is, you know, once with wave of crime and all that stuff coming in play right now, you know, how would the people react to see, you know, persons climbing up on the steps coming to the back of their homes? That's another thing that has to be considered. But I love the idea that, yes, perhaps we should mandate to put some old tires or whatever with some ropes along the canal for those persons who actually go swimming there, that if they happen to get a cramp or something and able to get close to one of them, they may be able to pull themselves up and save themselves. That's a very good idea. But is it mandated? I don't think so.
Yeah.
But it should be something that I think should be considered.
Right.
For taking my call.
Absolutely.
Well, caller, there are collapsible steps that that can fold up and pull up, and there's also rope steps that you can put down as well.
In emergency situations,
exactly.
Right, when there's an SOS.
So you don't have to leave it down.
All right, Phil, we've got 3 minutes exactly. I got two calls. Callers, you got 30 seconds. Good morning.
Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Good day, Lady Green. How are you doing?
I am good, thank you. How are you?
Good day to you, Green.
Good day.
I didn't want to put you on blast. This morning, Ms. Green, Man Davis was on, but I said, no, I ain't gonna bother them no more because I need my backyard farming to go up.
Boy, listen, don't you worry. If you on the live feed right now, you can see my paper, what I had on the back burner, but that only means that I'm trying to get Mr. Davis to come in again next week with me because the government is launching an initiative to create 500 backyard farms.
Well, if I count on you and Davis, I know I ain't going to make that.
No, man, don't say that.
Look here, take this number right now, 428.
I can't take the number now because I ordered the machine.
I got you, okay.
I call in to let you know that your guest is very, very well versed in this water world we live in.
Yeah.
However, I think we can do some things to mitigate against the little children that are being caught up in this mess.
Okay.
Places like Seabreeze Canal. I used to jump jackknife in Seabreeze Canal when I was small, right? We had one or two little kids with difficulties. What should be done is waterways like that and the Gulf. What they need to do is put fences and put razor wires at the top of the fence so the little kids can't scale and get in.
They can cut the fence. If they want to get in the water, they can get in the water.
Make it as hard as possible,
though.
Yeah, make it as hard as possible. You slow them down.
Yeah.
You have areas where sharks may be frequent, like down in that teleport point.
You
put signs.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, we need to be more proactive with things like that, Mark.
Well, absolutely. Thank you.
Anyway, thanks for taking my call, and I could be on your case next week.
Yeah, man. Within being proactive, I could speak to my great boss down at MacFit 360, Ms. Mackey. We will probably put together a program for the young kids and adults. Come out there and learn how to swim. Learn the safeties of the water. You don't have to be a professional swimmer. You don't have to be Michael Phelps. But as long as you can save yourself and potentially save somebody else, that's all that we're looking for. Have safety measures inside the water and make sure that we're good.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Phil Davis Jr., for joining me this morning on Guardian Radio AM. Thank you for the listeners and the callers. It was a wonderful morning. Thank you for joining us. Have a conversation with your loved one, your neighbor, your children, your cousin, your grandson about water and water safety. Have a great day, Bahamas.
Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.